We're continuing to read this morning from the book of Colossians, chapter 1, verses 9 to 23, which is on page 983. Colossians chapter 1, starting at verse 9. And so, from the day we heard, we have not ceased to pray for you, asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so as to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. May you be strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, for all endurance and patience with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. He has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him, if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister.
Tom, thank you very much for reading for us. Let me add my welcome to Chris's, especially if this is your first time with us, a very warm welcome to you. Thank you for joining us this morning at St. Nick's Church. Please to keep your Bibles open to Colossians chapter 1, and you'll find an outline there on the back of your handout, which you found on the chairs as you came in. You may find that helpful for the next half hour or so. So we've got a lot to cover this morning. My aim today is not to say everything that could be said on these verses. My first outline for this passage was basically four sermons crammed into one, and believe me, nobody wants to hear that. No one wants to hear me preach four sermons in a row, unless, of course, you're on the weekend away. You'll have plenty of time to recover in between each sermon, so please do come on the weekend away. Don't be put off by that. But I'm not trying to say everything that could be said. My aim this morning is to capture the essence of this passage, the basic thrust of it. So if you like sports, think of it as a highlight reel. And instead of showing you every minute of the match, I'm giving you the gist of what happened, who won, who lost, the game-changing moments, that sort of thing. And the gist of the passage is this. I think Paul wants us to stay where we are as Christians. He wants us to keep doing more of the same. I think verse 23 is the key verse of today's passage, so have a look with me at that verse. So verse 23, Paul says that we should continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that we heard. And the words he uses are continue and stable. and steadfast and not shifting. And these are stay where you are kinds of words. These are do more of the same kinds of words. Now, the problem is we are so easily bored by the same old things, and we are so easily enticed by the new and exciting. I think that's probably true of every age, but especially true of this one. In fact, we've even made up a word to show how little we like doing more of the same, and it's a word samey. We'll say things like the food is samey or the music is samey, and I'm pretty sure that is not a nice thing to say. But let's be honest, I think Christianity can feel a bit samey after a while. If you've only been a Christian for a year, you may not understand what I'm saying. But if you've been a Christian for 5 years, or 10 years, or 20 years, it may be that you're getting tired of hearing the same things again and again. And it may be that we need to change our thinking here. Because speaking for myself, that's a danger I see in my own heart. The same old truths become samey, which I think means boring. And according to Paul, that is not a good place to be spiritually. Here's the thing about Bible teaching. There isn't a lot of room for new ideas. The Bible hasn't changed over the last 2,000 years, so given enough time, you will hear something you've heard before. I can pretty much guarantee that. So the question is, how do we feel when that happens? Are we a little disappointed that we're not learning something new? Or maybe we're just bored of hearing the same things again and again? If I'm being honest, that's the way I sometimes react. I'm a little bored and a little disappointed. But I think Paul would have a very different reaction, and he would be thrilled that the same things are being taught. Because if you're hearing the same things about the same Jesus, then that will help you do verse 23. It will help you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the gospel you heard. And I think the rest of the passage was written to help us do verse 23, to help us do more of the same and to love doing more of the same. We've got 3 points today, and our first point comes from the prayer, verses 9 to 14. And we're going to focus on verse 11, because I think that captures the essence of the prayer. And point one is this: staying Christian is everything. Have a look with me at verse 11. And we're going to start by looking at the first half of that sentence. So verse 11a, Paul prays for the Colossians. May you be strengthened with all power according to God's glorious might. Now let's pause there and let me ask you a question. How would you complete that sentence? So Paul is asking God to strengthen them with all power. So how would you finish that prayer? Or if you ask the Christians, you know, how would they finish that prayer? Just to sharpen this a little, let me put the question another way. What do you think is the most powerful thing God can do for you? How would most people answer that question? Well, I think most people would expect some sort of change if power is involved. That's the way we normally think about power. People with power can change things. They can make things happen. And if you've been studying Mark's gospel with us in small groups, maybe you're thinking, well, Jesus used his power to heal people and cast out demons. So maybe that's the sort of power Paul wants for these Christians in Colossae. He wants them to have freedom from disease, because that sounds like the kind of thing you might need all of God's power to achieve. But look at how Paul finishes the prayer, verse 11. Paul prays, may you be strengthened with all power according to God's glorious might for all endurance and patience with joy. Which is another way of saying, may God keep you Christian. That's what the word endurance means. It means staying a Christian. And I take it patience with joy simply means joyfully waiting for Jesus to return. Now I wonder what you make of that. I wonder how that compares to how others would finish that prayer. Because Paul thinks that God needs to use all of his power simply to keep people Christian. That's the prayer there in verse 11. And let's pause there to unpack that just a little. Because I think verse 11 is saying that it is a miracle that people stay Christian for more than a year. That may be a surprising thing to say, but maybe we've underestimated how difficult it is to stay a Christian. One of the things I pray regularly for all of you is that you will still be Christian tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that. And maybe you think I'm aiming too low. But Paul would say that is an ambitious prayer. That is an everything prayer, because that kind of prayer requires all of God's power. It's a miracle that people stay Christian for more than a year. And a year from now, if Paul hears that these Colossians are still plodding along, still being Christian, and even if they haven't progressed at all from where they were a year ago, and they're still fighting the same sins, but still hanging on to Jesus, I don't think he'd be disappointed at all. I think he'd be thrilled that they're continuing in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the gospel they heard. Now, it may be that as a culture, we undervalue things like stability and steadfastness. So, for example, if you want to butter someone up, call them trendy. If you want to put someone down, call them traditional. We love the idea of advancing and progressing and moving on to new things, and we get bored of staying where we are and doing more of the same. But Paul thinks that being stable and steadfast is everything. He thinks staying a Christian is everything. And if you want to pray an ambitious prayer for another Christian, Paul would say, pray that they stay Christian, because that's the kind of thing that needs all of God's power. And in a letter that's all about doing more of the same, it's not surprising that Paul opens with a more of the same kind of prayer. And he prays in verse 11, may you be strengthened with all power for endurance and patience with joy. Okay, let's move on to point two. We're looking at verses 15 to 22. And again, we're just focusing on the key verses that capture the essence of the paragraph. Point two is that forgiveness is everything. Being reconciled to God is everything. Now, verses 15 to 18 are well known to many of us. They're mind-blowing verses. I know that means just kind of cool these days. But these verses are truly mind-blowing. And if your mind isn't totally blown by what Paul says here, then I don't think you've actually understood what he's saying. So, for example, have a look with me at verse 16. And look at the end of that verse. And Paul says at the end of verse 16, all things were created through Jesus and for Jesus. Now, perhaps the most stunning thing I've ever seen is the Grand Canyon. I won't try to describe it. My word pictures look a lot like the stick drawings are doing in Crest right now. But imagine the most beautiful and majestic thing you've ever seen. Some of you are planning to go skiing this winter, so imagine the Alps. What does verse 16 say about the Alps? Well, verse 16 tells us that when God decided he wanted some Alps, he turned to Jesus and he said, can you make me some Alps? And Jesus said, no problem, and Jesus made the Alps. Verse 16, all things were made through him. Then if you were to ask, but what was the point of that? I mean, what is the point of the Alps? Why do they even exist? Strange question to ask. And you may think it's a question with no answer. But verse 16 tells us there is an answer. The Alps were made so that Jesus could enjoy them. Verse 16 again, all things were made for him. And then verse 17 adds that the only reason the Alps continue to exist is that Jesus commands them to exist. That's what it says at the end of verse 17. In him, all things hold together. And I take it that means the moment Jesus stops saying exist to the Alps, they will cease to exist. Now, I was thinking, this has got to be the future of anti-theft technology. I mean, they've got to put this in the iPhone 12, whatever the, I don't know what the next iPhone is. But anyway, fingerprint scanning is so 2016. Why not design the iPhone so that it ceases to exist when you take it away from its owner? I mean, surely that would stop people trying to steal your iPhone. Okay, that's a silly illustration, but I think you get the point. Paul says in verse 17 that all things continue to exist simply because Jesus commands them to exist. And if Jesus ever decides to stop speaking creation into existence, then all of this, everything we see, will vanish. That's what it means to say that in him, all things hold together. Now, I think these verses really rub us the wrong way when we realize that all things include all people and all creation includes all humanity. And that means you can ask questions like, who made her? And what's the point of her? And why is he still in one piece? Now, I know those are not questions we normally ask about people, but I think Paul would say you can ask those questions about people in relation to Jesus. So for example, let's take the question, who made her? Well, verse 16 says, by Jesus, all things were created. And I take it all things includes her. Or how about the question, what's the point of her? Again, that's not the question you normally ask unless you really don't like someone. But even that question has an answer. And at the end of verse 16, Paul says, all things were created through him and for him. So Paul would say that she was made for Jesus. That's the reason she exists. That's the point of her existence. Or one more question. Why is he still in one piece? Verse 17, in Jesus, all things hold together. I know we're talking about people in a very impersonal way. And if that rubs us the wrong way, I think it's meant to rub us the wrong way. Because if we're feeling very small, and Jesus is looking very big, then I think Paul would say, good, that was exactly my intention. Now, we've only looked at verses 16 and 17, but the point of the other verses is exactly the same. Jesus is everything. He's the maker of everything, and the owner of everything, and the point of everything, and the sustainer of everything. It's been like that since the very beginning, that's verse 15, and it will be like that at the very end, that's verse 18. Now here's a million-dollar question. What did the everything Jesus do with all of that power? So if you had all the power in the universe at your disposal, what would you do with it? I am terrified to think of what some of you might do with that. Frankly, I'm terrified to think what I might do with that. But what did Jesus do with all that power? Well, surely the next two verses are the answer to that question. Verses 19 and 20, and I think these are the key verses, because they tell us what the everything Jesus did with his everything power. Verse 19, the everything Jesus became a man. All the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in him. That's Jesus becoming a man. So that, verse 20, he could reconcile us to God by dying on a cross. That's what Jesus did with all the power in the universe. He used all of his power to get himself nailed to a cross. And I just wonder, what does that do to your view of forgiveness? What does that do to the way you see being reconciled to God? I think forgiveness may be the most undervalued blessing in the Bible. And if I'm being honest, forgiveness of sins is the kind of thing that I take for granted after a while. And the cross just becomes a part of the furniture. But Jesus would say to me, I gave up everything so you could have that. I died on a cross so you could have that. So why are you treating it so cheaply? Think about the way we value things. If you're trying to work out the value of something, all you have to do is put it up for sale and see what someone is willing to pay for it. So for example, if you want to know what your house is worth, well, find a buyer and see what they're willing to pay for it, and then you'll know how much your house is worth. But how do you value forgiveness? How do you find a buyer for that? Well, there's one person in the universe who was willing to buy that for us, and his name is Jesus. And he happened to own everything in the universe, verses 15 to 18. And the everything Jesus says, verse 19, I'll trade everything I own, and verse 20, I'll even trade in my life. I'll trade all that so that they can be forgiven and reconciled to God. My life or theirs. I think that's a fair trade. Do we have a deal? Now, how do you put a number to that? How do you measure something like that? Jesus says that your forgiveness is worth everything to him. So what's it worth to you? How much is forgiveness worth to you? I thought we just had an excellent slot in giving, because all true Christian giving begins by reflecting on what God gave to us. And these verses tell us that Jesus gave up everything so that we might be reconciled. I think verse 22 gives us one more reason to value our forgiveness. And according to verse 22, why is forgiveness everything? Why is it everything to be reconciled to God? Well, have a look with me at that verse. And verse 22 says that those who are now reconciled to God by the death of Jesus, one day they will be presented holy and blameless and above reproach before him. And that has got to count for everything. Just last week, we shared the Lord's Supper from that table over there. And let me ask you a question, if I may. We all made a promise to live in a way that honors God. Let me quote the words we all said if you were here last week. We said, we offer you our souls and bodies to be a living sacrifice. That's the promise we made to God last week. So here's the question, if I may. Who here kept that promise to be a living sacrifice? I take it that means giving up everything for God. So who here gave up everything for God? And if the answer to that question is no, then why are we even here? What right do we have to come to this table, let alone the Lord's table on the last day? What right does any of us have to be here today making even more promises that we'll break by tomorrow? But isn't that the point of verse 22? Our promises to God are worthless, but the promises Jesus makes to us are everything. And here's the promise Jesus makes to all those who are reconciled to God by his death. Verse 22, he promises to present us holy and blameless and above reproach before God. In plain English, that means none of your broken promises will count against you. And because of Jesus and his death, you can show up to heaven and you'll have every right to be there in spite of what you've done. And Jesus will say to you on that day, everything I have is yours. Come and enjoy it with me. That's what it means to be reconciled and forgiven now. And it is the only thing you have in this life that will count for anything on the last day. So that's point two. Being reconciled is everything. Because Jesus gave up everything so that you could be reconciled. And being reconciled now means being blameless on the last day. Here's point three. It is possible to lose everything. That's what Paul says in verse 23. So back to our key verse today. And notice that verse 23 begins with an if. And I think that is the scariest word in the entire letter, because the if in verse 23 means that it is possible to lose everything in verse 22. So if you follow the logic from verse 22, Paul says that you will be blameless on the last day, but only if you do verse 23. Only if you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the gospel you heard. Now, if that verse scares us just a little, well, I think we're meant to be scared. I think that verse is meant to scare us just a little. And if we're worried that we're in danger of losing everything, well, actually, that's a good thing, because that means verse 23 is working. And hopefully it means you'll take the warning to heart and you'll stay a Christian and you'll stick with the gospel that brought you forgiveness of sins. Now, please don't hear me as saying that new is bad and trendy is dangerous. I mean, I'm probably the least trendy person you'll ever meet. I wish I could convince you I have nothing against new and exciting things. But on some things at least, we've got to stick with what we have. We cannot keep moving on. We cannot keep chasing after new things. So for instance, there's nothing wrong with swapping out your old shirt or your old phone because you fancy a new one. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is something wrong with swapping out the old wife because you fancy a new one. There's something deeply wrong with that. And if we take verse 23 seriously, then I take it Christianity is more like the marriage than the mobile phone, meaning moving on will only lead to disaster. And when it comes to our faith, Paul says we need to continue and be stable and steadfast and not shifting. I take it the warning here is very strong, because the danger here is very real. And there's a very real danger that Christians could move on from the gospel they heard, and then they will lose everything. So what do you do if you find yourself getting bored of being reconciled? We've all been there before. We've all taken forgiveness for granted. So what do you do when that happens? Well, I think Paul would say to me and to you, think about what Jesus gave up so that you could be reconciled. And think about what Jesus will give you because you are reconciled. There's nothing dull or boring about being a forgiven and reconciled sinner. And maybe we need to change the way we think about being Christians. Because if you're a Christian, then you're sitting on a gold mine. You've won the gold medal. You've punched the winning ticket. I'm using every trite illustration I can think of, but I think you get the point. You've won. You are already on top of the world. And you're standing where Usain Bolt used to stand before he got old and stopped winning gold medals. Except you can stay where you are forever. Because forgiveness is everything. And being reconciled to God is the only thing in this life that will count for anything on the last day. So why on earth would you move on to something else? Why would you go looking for more? How can you have more than everything? The only way to go from here is down. Because staying a Christian is everything. And being reconciled to God is everything. So continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the gospel you heard. Let me close in a short prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you that Jesus gave up everything so that we might be reconciled to you. Please help us to value that as much as he did. And please help us to remember that being reconciled now means that one day we will receive everything. You have qualified us to share in that inheritance. So please strengthen us with all power so that we might endure as Christians and wait patiently and joyfully for Jesus to return. Please help us to continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel we heard. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.